Joined.
Good morning, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Malco, were you listening to music?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're going to wait and see if someone else comes.
Okay.
Has joined.
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm late. I'm sorry. That's why I didn't announce myself. I thought you had already started.
No. No, we were waiting for someone else to come, so
okay.
We can start now.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and mute.
All right. We'll begin with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabarichu Ishkin Tebid Hilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Leakta L'shem Yud He Bavavhe V'Yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayino Amadunai Elohino Elena Maseya Deno Kurene Elena Maseya Deno Kurenehu. Today's class is from the Evolution of God Sefer by Rabbi Bar Sadok. We're in part two or Lecture 3 of Part 2. The title is The Igulim and the Yosher of Adam Kadmon, The Origins of Female and Male in Creation. The word Igulim means spheres or wheels, and Yosher means columns or lines. Throughout his writings, Rabbi Chaim Vital always refers to the first manifestation of Hashem, the Ein Sof, in creation, as Adam Kadmon, the primordial man. Adam Kadmon came about as follows. After vacating the halal, the empty space, the light of the Ein Sof began to repenetrate into the now empty space. The light entered the halal in the form of a very fine, thin column emanated from the top. The light proceeded to emanate downwards to a point. At this point, the light circumvented the entire circle of the halal, making a second circle within it. After this, the light penetrated a little deeper and again circumvented the entire halal sphere and created a second circle of light within the first. This procedure continued until there were 10 such circles of light, one within the other. These 10 spheres permeated the entire halal from surface to surface, from top to bottom to middle. These 10 spheres of light form the primordial pattern of creation, the essential beginning. These are the 10 orbicular sephirot of Adam Kadmon. So we have read this first paragraph, and we need to visualize it. The Tzimtzum is Hashem's, the light of Hashem has withdrawn. So we now have an empty circular space within the universe. Now, the overall look could be a square, it could be a trapezoid, it could be many different geometrical figures. But it's essentially a point, and that point has, from our point of view looking at it, that point has expanded into a circle. But the point and the circle are dark. There's no light within them from our perspective. Now, the light repenetrates. It does not go all the way down to the center, to the middle point. It goes step by step down to the middle point. What happens in that step-by-step process is the light penetrates to a point, to a certain one-tenth, so to speak, of the distance between the top of the circle that's dark to the middle point of the circle. In effect, that could be called a radius of the circle. That line is divided into 10 equal spaces. The light penetrates to the first space. And now, instead of continuing down to the second point, it diffuses itself into a circle, so that it starts to brighten the circle. So the first circle, the first point, begins as being dark without light, and then there is a process of the light flowing through that dark circle all the way around the circumference of that dark circle until it comes back to itself. And we now have one lighted circle and 9 dark circles, at which point the light continues to the second point, the second light, the second circle. And it waits there while the light diffuses through that second dark circle. And it goes all the way around. We're not saying that it goes left first and all the way around counterclockwise. We're not saying it goes right first and it goes all the way around clockwise. And we're also not saying that it's going in both directions at the same time so that it meets at the bottom. Rabbi Chaim Vital's writings does not clarify that. It says it came to the first circle, it stops and proceeds to reveal light in that circle until it has completed all of the light revelation of that circle. And then it moves on to the next one, where it then completes the second circle. And then it moves on to the third circle. And it does this repeatedly, step by step, circle by circle, until it reaches that center point, until it reaches the 10th circle. Has this been helpful to try and describe it this way? Or do you have, any of you have a different way of understanding how the line works with the circle? Because that's really what we are talking about. How does the line... Go ahead, Martha.
Kind of reminds me of a tornado, how a tornado starts out, you know, circle, 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 and then it comes down to a point, you know, when it touches the ground.
Right, and when it touches the ground, it destroys things. But it doesn't really go circle, circle. It just keeps, it creates a circle. It swirls around in a circle.
Right.
So we can look at the tornado and say, well, it's a circle, but it's actually a line.
Yeah.
But here we're not saying it's a circle, because that circle is the whole circle. But it's a divided into, and I really shouldn't use the word divided, but there are 10 circles. Now, we have seen glyphs that literally are a tree of life in a different glyph. We're used to the tree of life being 10 circles and lines connecting the circles. Whereas this description, then the glyph that we've seen, is 10 circles, the widest circle and then the narrowest circle. Each one of them, there's 10 lines, 10 circles. But we're saying that the process of revealing the light in those 10 circles is step by step, one circle at a time. It doesn't come all the way down to the center and then expand the light in all 10 at the same time. That's not how it worked. It was a step-by-step. One circle would be lit up, and then it would go to the next inner circle, where it would again be lit up. I hope I'm being clear, and I'm hoping that you remember the glyph that you've seen, which is the 10 circles, where we have these 10 circular lines that are essentially equal distant from each other. For example, if the center point is 5 inches from the outer circle, the outer circumference, then each circle is a half inch circle. But that half inch has to be filled with light. Initially, it was the light withdrew and created the circle, but it created in a sense of darkness. But we know that there is really no darkness, because the light is always there. But it left, so from our perspective, it appears dark. And now it's being relit, meaning re-revealing of that concealed light in each circle. I hope it's clear. So I'm continuing to read. While all this mystical metaphor is well and good, unless we understand it, we totally lose the importance of what is being related to us. Remember, the pattern of creation is called a man, a primordial man. This means that the entire order of spiritual evolution, what is called the Seder HaHishtalshlut, is not only a pattern to the universe at large, it is more importantly for us a map of inner man from our deepest, most psychic and psychological origins to the form of our genetic structure and biology. Therefore, a proper understanding of Adam Kadmon is essential for a proper understanding of us. Adam Tachton, man, is being related to us. Adam Tachton. Man below. The initial 10 orbicular sephirot of Adam Kadmon emanate a unique aspect of Adam Kadmon, which Rabbi Chaim calls the nefesh level of Adam Kadmon. The nefesh is the first of the five levels of soul to manifest. It is the rudimentary life force of everything. Rabbi Chaim does not teach us much about the igulim of Adam Kadmon. Igulim are the circles of Adam Kadmon. He states that being the Holy Zohar, speaks about almost exclusively about another form of the ten sephirot of Adam Kadmon. Then so will he. This other form of the ten sephirot of Adam Kadmon is called Yosher, which would mean straight. This is the pattern of the ten sephirot with which most today are familiar, where the sephirot emanate in the form of columns, right, left, and center, as opposed to orbicular spheres, one inside the other. Rabbi Chaim is very clear about the order of these two emanating patterns. First came the ten sephirot in the form of the spheres, the igulim. Only when they were completed did the ten sephirot manifest in the form of yosher, the straight lines. Now remember one very important point. The igulim and the yosher are not two separate emanations of different sephirot. They are one and the same. There are only 10 general sephirot in Adam Kadmon, not 20. The igulim and the yosher are two aspects of the same reality. They are not to be separated as two distinct sets of sephirot. The difference between them is that the orbicular igulim emanate the nefesh level of soul, and the yosher level of the sephirot emanate the ruach level of soul. Now, how do we understand what I have just read? How can it be two different things and the same at the simultaneously? That's really the conflict. That's really the paradox. Now, we could visualize a pattern of the glyph that is circular, that has the 10 circles. And then we could imagine another glyph exactly the same way that is above the first one. And there is a relationship between those two glyphs, so that each of the 10 circles is able to communicate to the, each of the 10 circles in the higher one. And then we would go up a third one, and a fourth one, and a fifth one. And then we can understand that the word Ruach consists of 10 sephirot, 10 circles. But all of those 10 circles are united as one thing called Ruach. Let me rephrase that. One thing called Nefesh. But that's not really what he's describing. He's not describing these two different circles, one on top of each other. He's describing lines and spheres as being the same thing. And our minds do not work like that. That's the paradox. How do we understand the lines and the spheres? And he's saying that the lines, he's saying the spheres come first. They reveal the light in the spheres. And then they continue down the path to the next level. But how can we truly understand the lines and the circles? This is our problem. This is why Rabbi Ashlag says, don't imagine the glyphs. They're confusing to you because they're showing you one way of looking, but it's not one way of existing. They're the same. How do we understand that? I'm continuing to read. Within the Igulim, the spheres themselves arose the Yosher. Within the circles arose the lines. The Yosher aspect of the Sephirot. While the Igulim express the life force level of the Nefesh of the Sephirot, the Ruach level manifests by the Yosher begin to manifest the personality of the Sephirot. In other words, because the Sephirot are in an orbicular form, they cannot interact with one another. Therefore, while their power is evident, it is nonetheless dormant. When, however, the Sephirot manifest in the form of columns, a dynamic chance occurs in their ability to interact by being placed in relationship to one another. The Yosher form of the Sephirot enables there to be polarity. With the creation of polarity, two opposing forces compete against one another. This competition of sorts forces the two competing forces to eventually find a compromise. And this leads to the creation of the third force, a state of balance and harmony that is neither of the previous two, but rather a third and unique entity, which is a union of them. This state of sway between right and left creates what we can call the personality of the Sephirot. This is the key to their interaction, the secret of all movement in the universe. The Igulim manifest the basic rudimentary passive form of the Sephirot. The Yosher manifests the more developed active form of the Sephirot. And these two forces of active and passive are a reflection of the relationship between the light of the Ein Sof and creation itself. The Ein Sof is the never-changing ultimate anti-reality. As such, it can be called passive. Creation, on the other hand, is dynamic and ever-changing. As such, it can be called active. Passive and active, therefore, are the two primordial forces in existence. One seeks movement, one seeks stillness. Metaphorically speaking, the passive elements in creation are called female, and the active elements are called male. In light of this, we find that the first manifestation of the Sephirot of Adam Kadmon, the Nefesh level, was the female form. And this corresponds to the initial act of the Tzimtzum, the withdrawal of the light of the Ein Sof, which was also a feminine act. Learn from this that in creation, the place of the female is always one step higher than that of the male. In the lower worlds, this order was reversed due to the breaking of the vessels and the corresponding sin of Adam. But we will discuss these things in their time and in their place. Although Rabbi Chaim does not discuss much about the Igulim aspect of the Sephirotic manifestations, we must seek a deeper understanding of their relationship to the Yosher aspect. For in order to understand ourselves and our roles as sexual human beings, male and female, it is important for us to understand the nature and relationship of the primordial forces that make us what we are. In order to understand Adam Kadmon, we must understand the Sephirah of Keter, for they are one and the same. Keter, the first Sephirah, manifests the kernel of life. Like the Ein Sof, Keter is incognizant to anything beneath it. This is because all aspects of mind and consciousness come forth from the Keter. Therefore, Keter is above them. Keter is the raw force of life, where everything exists in its most basic rudimentary aspects. Unlike the Ein Sof, which is unmanifest potential, Keter is manifest. Yet in Keter, the manifestation is just beginning. Keter is the highest because it is the first. Keter is the essence of unity, before all the different parts divide and develop independent identities. The universal pattern of Adam Kadmon, from which would come all creation, first manifests in its rudimentary form as Igulim. The Igulim manifest the Nefesh soul level, which is the life force of all in creation. Adam Kadmon is a partsuf, a separatic face. In the world of Tikkun, the world of Haberudim, which will be discussed in future lectures. All Sephirot are perceived through groupings called Partsufim, faces. In addition, in the future lectures, we will discuss the concepts of Olamot, worlds. For our discussions here, we must understand that we are talking about the world and the Partsuf of Adam Kadmon. In this case, Adam Kadmon is the metaphorical name given to the general Sephirah, Keter. At this highest of levels, both the world and the partsuf of Adam Kadmon are identical. This will not be the same in the lower worlds. In the lower worlds, as will be discussed, there are other sephirotic faces for their individual keters. In the realm of Atzilut, Keter consists of two parts of Fim, Atik Yomim and Arik Anpin. Remember, a partsuf is a sephirotic face. It is how God is perceived at this level by what is believed beneath it. Arik Anpin is the face of Keter that looks down upon the lower Sephirot to radiate upon them the light from above. As such, Keter from Atzilut and below is usually referred to as Arik. Atik is the face of the Keter that looks above to receive the light. All these details will be fully explained when we discuss the world of Atzilut and the Partsufim therein. There is a unique relationship to Adam Kadmon here, which is appropriate to mention. According to the Zohar HaRakia, which is considered the Arizal's commentary to the Zohar, Adam Kadmon wears a crown upon his head. This crown is the source of Atik Yomim. As we said, throughout the entire Halal, only 10 Sephirot emanated. These 10 Sephirot are the 10 Sephirot of Adam Kadmon, who is the general Sephirah Keter. Everything else that comes afterwards is only a manifestation of them. Adam Kadmon is Keter. Adam Kadmon Keter is the beginning of life, the rudimentary essentials of existence. The first aspect of the Keter to manifest in creation is its basic form, called its nefesh. Yet even within this rudimentary form exists the personality called the Ruach. This can be compared to the birth of a human child. When born, apparently a child has no personality whatsoever. Yet as any parent knows, this is most untrue. For as soon as the infant can do anything, it manifests likes and dislikes, preferences and, yes, personality. In some psychological schools, it is taught that a human being is born with his or her complete personality. Growing up in their eyes
has joined
does not develop one's personality, but rather manifests that which is already there. In other words, the maturation process is one of the manifestation of already existing yet unrealized potential, as opposed to the creation of something new. We can say then that in the womb and at birth, the human child is born with the igulim of Adam Kadmon, which is the level of consciousness. This is the rudimentary life force energy, pregnant with a lightened personality. Yet within moments of being born, an infant begins to manifest diversity in behavior. Yet still being an infant, the mental process of intuition and understanding have not yet come into play. When a child is in these early months, he or she is manifesting the Yosher of Adam Kadmon level of human consciousness. These active and passive aspects of life and consciousness exist prior to the infant ever developing a sense of self. Yet once a sense of self develops, one of the two forces remains dominant in this developing personality. Either the human soul embraces the stillness and silence of the igulim, or it embraces the movement and vibrations of the Yosher. In actuality, the preference chosen by the infant was made much earlier than at its physical birth. This choice was made at conception by the soul itself. This is when the soul chose to incarnate as either a boy or a girl. The igulim aspect of the Sephirot of Adam Kadmon are the origins of the female form throughout creation. We are not taught much about the igulim because it is their nature to be concealed. From this, we learn that it is the natural way of the female throughout creation to be the more still, silent, and concealed form, more so than her male counterpart. Indeed, all social roles and positions ascribed to men and women have their source in the higher worlds. The roles of men and women reflect the spiritual origins of their souls. Therefore, modern secular attempts to change the roles of men and women in society undermine the entire order of creation. While the conscious mind of men and women can become confused, our underlying spiritual pattern can never be changed. When people follow that which is modern and forget that which is latent within, they create all kinds of psychological problems that inevitably manifest as physical ailments and disease. Only by one staying true to supernal patterns can one maintain a perfect state of balance and health. As it is in man below, so it is in man, Adam Kadmon, above. Know then this great rule. Everything in one world is merely a reflection of the world above it. Therefore, one can learn human biology and psychology, and from the lessons learned therein, extrapolate lessons about the nature and operations of the entire universe. The same holds true for our lectures about Adam Kadmon. For even though the level of Adam Kadmon is far beyond human cognition, it is still not beyond human experience. While we can never understand Adam Kadmon because he is above mind, nonetheless, he is the source of mind.
Has joined.
Of intuition and of life itself. Touching this level through meditation, therefore, essentially enables one to touch Hashem. At present, only the rare few ever succeed in touching this level of Adam Kadmon in meditation. However, we are taught that the lowest aspect of Adam Kadmon, his Malchut, is destined to be revealed to everyone in this, our physical world. This is to occur with the coming of Mashiach. What this means is that the vibrant life force that underlies all subatomic structures and thus forms everything in our physical universe will be exposed and subject to human examination and interaction. The results of this will hardly be negative because the pure, unadulterated light of Adam Kadmon is so profoundly strong that its mere presence on earth will cause the nullification of all evil. Even death will cease to exist, because the light of Adam Kadmon is too strong for it. Evil, therefore, will be completely nullified. Along with ignorance, hardships, suffering, and pain. There is a secret here as to how this will happen, but I will leave that for another time. Rabbi Chaim states that the lights within Adam Kadmon are too sublime for us to understand. We cannot understand that within is within that which is within Adam Kadmon. However, the light did not stay within Adam Kadmon. It emanated outside of him, from his ears, his nose, his mouth, and eventually from his eyes. Of course, all this is metaphorical language. Therefore, in our next lesson, we will discuss the light that came forth from the ears of Adam Kadmon. Now, you'll notice that I made commentary on the early part of this chapter, and then did not make any commentary on the rest of the chapter. And that's because the early part of the chapter is trying to reconcile these two levels. In our physical world, can you reconcile male and female? We know that the language of a female is the same words as the language of a male, but they have two different meanings. When a female says, "I love you," to a male, it has the meaning of a romantic relationship. It has a meaning of a sharing relationship. When a male says to a female, "I love you," it is not the same. There are similarities, but it is not the same. And this is the basic issue. If you cannot understand this polarity, if you cannot understand this conflict between male and female, between right and left, if you try and reconcile this without understanding, you're only going to generate confusion. So I will now ask and say, I've taught you, I've commented that the difference between Adam Kadmon in the form of circles And Adam Kadmon, in the form of lines, is a paradox. And as human beings, being in the context of that paradox, it's very difficult to reconcile the two. But we have to constantly remind ourselves of this paradox. We have to constantly remind ourselves that this paradox exists and works, even if we do not understand it. But in the working thereof, we have to start to move forward, where the circles has now re-revealed the light that it withdrew from. But it has the potential energy of the lower levels or the higher levels, depending on your point of view. Once you recognize that everything is in that level of Adam Kadmon, the circles are there, the lines are there, the process of becoming is there. You begin to ascertain Adam Kadmon. Does anybody have any questions, comments, thoughts? This is a chapter that I highly recommend you repeat, and I will post the recording as soon as it's available, because it's confusing, but it's not confusing, it's a paradox.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Definitely need the recording, because we have to, I would have to start it, stop, just to visualize, you know, kind of make a diagram for myself, you know, just visualizing the circles and the lights and the so yes, the recording would certainly help me.
I will definitely put the recording together. I would also definitely recommend that you purchase the Kindle book so that you can reread the chapter repeatedly. The reason I say the Kindle book, because it's only like $10. And the Kindle itself can be downloaded onto your computer or your phone, so you don't have to buy another technological device. The Kindle program is available for free on Amazon. You can download it, and then you can put as many books as you want, particularly this particular book, known as the Evolution of God.
Okay, all right.
But whether you listen to the computer and as you said, you make the diagrams, I've described the diagrams as I understand them. It's how I have reconciled the idea of the circles and the lines being in Adam Kadmon. But this is what works for me, and I can't tell you that I truly understand it. I can only say to you, one is potential, one is actual. One is passive, one is active. I can describe them as conflicts. I can describe them as paradox, as I have, but in reality, how will they come into my life? How will I utilize them in my life? That's going to be each of you making the effort to understand what is a paradox. For me, a paradox is a mathematical diagram. For me, a paradox is a formula where you track all the different numbers that relate to the formula, and you see that the line goes up and down and roundabout, and then there's a break where the line isn't there, and then it starts all again, all over again. And that is the formula. But that's meaningful to me. Each of you have to find what the way to relate to this meaning yourself. And this is why I'm constantly stressing, I can't prove anything to you. I can just help you when you have something you don't understand in a meditation, that we can discuss it, because I have things that I don't understand, but I can come to reconcile them as I have come to reconcile them. Each of you has the meaning, knows the meaning of paradox. But can you explain it to another person? The answer is no. Because it's how do they visualize the meaning of paradox? What is the picture of a paradox? What does the picture of a paradox look like to you? Each person will have a different view of that picture. And that's what I continue to speak about. Are there any other questions or comments or thoughts? We are essentially out of time. And I'm not hearing anybody ask questions or make comments other than to say you need the recording, and I do understand that and will do it as quickly as possible.
Well, I did get a little visualization, but I don't know if it's relating to what, you know, to your paradox. With mine, in my meditation, it's... I consider it a little figure that kind of looks like a six. It's a string, but then, and I take that to mean it's Vav helping me into the meditation. And there's two little black dots that I consider eyes, but they're really, to me, dagesh's, which tells me that there are other letters within, that the two dots are within two letters that I'm not sure what they are because they're concealed. But that little six moves, the string moves, and sometimes it kind of looks like a circle. and then it's more like I'm in the, you know, I've reached a point of where I can ask questions, or I can, like one time I got stuck and I just sat there not knowing what to do, but I looked around and saw what I saw in the universe, and then the little six string loosened itself and extended out, and I grabbed the string and came back, got off of it, wherever I was, which I thought was a store. So I don't know if those strings and dots and the string that changes shapes as it moves is my paradox. And I don't know if you can tell me it is either. And I don't know if I should have even said this, you know.
No, I'm glad you said it, because it is how you perceive it. There's no right or wrong to how you perceive it.
Well, Bob,
as you were speaking, you have a circle with a line coming off the circle. That's what a number six looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But is the line coming down like a nine, or is the line going up like a six? And is the nine slightly curved or straight? Now, I'm asking you rhetorical questions. It's your diagram, it's your picture, and it's fine. It works for you for now. And if it stops working for you, you'll revisit the story, you'll revisit the chapter, and you'll come to a different picture or a modified six. But this is the process. That's why we say in Kabbalah, you have to read this material again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it changes. The material doesn't change, but our perception of the material changes. So you initially have a picture of the material, and then go back to it a year later, and you have a different picture. Has the material changed? No, but you have changed. And that's how you now perceive the change. That's how you now perceive the material.
Well, I wrote these notes. Need to listen to the recording again. Need to outline the chapter. Need to go or revisit the 231 gates of the Sefer Yetzirah. So that's what came to me during this.
I understand. And all of that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no 231 gates discussed in this chapter.
No, but it was last chapter. I'm still hanging on to that one.
I understand. And that one has the recording on the recordings file.
Right.
And both of these chapters are confusing. They're both paradoxical. And that's what we have to resolve for ourselves.
Well, with Malka, she saw the tornado. With me, I continue to see a slinky when you talk about lines and circles and movement.
Right.
So that may have to change for me, too. So.
But that's the definition of life. Change. But most people, that I understand it today, that's the same way I will understand it in a year. But the truth is, in a year, you don't remember the way you understood it last year. You now understand it in a different way. And this is the process of life where you you hug change. You welcome change. Because that's how you can resolve paradox. I hope you all have a beautiful afternoon.
You too, Hanover.
Shalom Gadol to everyone.
Shalom Gadol.
Shalom. Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.